Grateful to get to spend this time today. I'm here with Gail Gordon in the East Bay in California. Gail has worked as a psychotherapist with children and adults for almost 15 years. Her training includes advanced studies in early development, trauma and somatics, and body-oriented therapies. Her work incorporates the impact of culture and social political oppression in our daily lives. A special interest has been integrating the body into therapy through somatic experiencing, somatic skills for therapists, and transforming touch. Learning the abundance of ways the body and mind are designed to heal from stress and trauma is an ongoing revelation. Welcome, Gail. I'm really looking forward to our talk today.
Thank you, and me too.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about who you are, where you are, how you are in this moment?
Well, I would say that I'm in the East Bay of the San Francisco area.
Perfect.
And I am doing pretty well right now. I'm excited to talk with you and share what comes up.
Yay. I was having fun reading your bio because we share many mutual interests, especially around developmental and complex trauma and somatics and attachment. So I have no idea where we'll go today, but I have a feeling it will be fun.
Hard to talk about the way I do therapy without talking about those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to ask everyone what inspires them to do the work that they're doing.
Well, the answer to that question is kind of the same as the answer to why did I become a therapist? I mean, at the time I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and I'd been in therapy for a while already, and it was starting to work. And that meant for me that I felt like I was starting to have a life. That's how I expressed it at the time. And when I thought about becoming a therapist, I imagined myself working with kids. And the goal was so that they could have a life before they turned 40. And now I work with kids as well as adults. So some people are well over 40. So whatever time of life it is, I am inspired by, and this almost sounds trite, but it's true, the capacity of a human being to heal from intense trauma, from mild trauma, from intense trauma, and to find their talents and their gifts and feel like they're part of humanity.
Yeah. I got goosebumps.
And me too.
So I'd love to hear, because we talk about complex and developmental trauma a lot in my field, but not everybody actually has a sense of what that is. And if you're up for it, could you break it down for us in terms of how you look at it?
Sure. Well, the simplest definition of trauma that I've heard is anything that overwhelms the nervous system. So if something happens to you, it overwhelms your nervous system, and you don't get the support to either calm the nervous system down so that you're not hyper active, hyper aroused, sorry, I couldn't think of the right word, or so you're not totally shut down, for instance, in a freeze state. If you don't get the support that helps you deal with that, you're living in a state where your body can't handle the all the information that it absorbed in the experience and all the biochemicals that your body released to help you survive the experience. So that's the simplest definition of trauma. And then there's, did you have a car accident when you were 40, or were you abused when you were 3, or under 3, or 12? You know, in the years when you're really, your brain still has not even developed fully. And that makes a difference in how your body can respond to the options your body has in responding to situations in the present day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so many people hear the word abuse and trauma and think, oh, that was not me. Yet they're carrying the symptoms of complex trauma or developmental trauma. And so I really like to remind folks that even just, misattunement, having an anxious parent or caregiver, for example, or any form of emotional neglect can create ruptures. It doesn't have to
Yes.
be those big, scary, overwhelming things we see in movies. Or I think a lot of people don't get the treatment they need because they think, oh, mine wasn't that bad. When really
Yes.
they experienced so many ruptures and misattunements that they just couldn't find themselves or any sense of nurturing or belonging. Would you say that's true?
I would say that's definitely true. So actually, thank you, because my answer was more to the dramatic. My first response was more to the dramatic than to the quieter, less observable, ongoing lack of impact of the lack of care and attunement.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of which affects the nervous system, the spirit.
Yeah. I know that one of the modalities that we both use is called transforming touch or transforming presence. And that comes out of training called transforming experienced brain. And part of why I asked you to come hang out with me today is that I just love how you describe things and how you define things. You're so intelligent and you're able to break things down in ways that so many people like wouldn't normally be able to. No pressure. But I'm wondering if you'd be able to just share what is that work to you? How would you describe that work and how you use it with your clients?
How would I describe transforming touch, transforming presence? Okay, well, the first thing is that I'm working online only now. So obviously, I can't use physical touch, which I did when I worked in an office, when I had an office. And the way I describe to people how, what makes it possible for transforming presence to work? How can our being together affect your nervous system, and actually mine as well? I like to give the example of, sometimes you're thinking about somebody kind of out of the blue, maybe you haven't heard from them for a while. And all of a sudden, you get a phone call from them after you've thought about them. This is not a super scientific explanation, but I think it's the same thing. Energy travels. And so our eye contact, our voices, our sense of each other is impacted by each other. And that can happen online as well as in person, of course. So, and transforming touch, there's certain protocols that involve parts of the body that are engaged and involved with the stress response. And the goal is to, I like to say it in terms to help balance the nervous system. So if we have a nervous system that's been exposed to traumatic events that hasn't had needs met, then the nervous system might be functioning on too active a level or too shut down a level. And we want to bring it into balance so that we have more options, more flexibility, more ease making decisions. The body's not always on guard. And, being in the presence of someone who cares for you has a positive impact. Whether we're doing transforming presence or just being together. I see you smiling at me. I mean, this is simple. You're smiling at me. You like what I said. And of course, that makes me happy. So I feel it through your expression and the energy that's communicated that way.
And it's so impactful for folks that didn't have safe or safe enough connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so simple, isn't it?
Simple doesn't necessarily mean always available, right? But
Yeah.
yes, theoretically, it's, a caregiver, a parent, a mom, a dad, whoever. That's caring for a child, being present and being calm enough inside themselves to be able to communicate both understanding the infant or child's mood and being able to be calm enough inside themselves to not get carried away by how the child is feeling so that they can offer comfort. So I have gone through it. It's not yet trademark, but a phrase I like to use, which is rocking the baby. So whether you're an adult or a child, and I've used this phrase working with parents who had trouble being present for their children, that what we're doing, whether I'm talking to an adult or a child, is we're soothing the nervous system. Which includes both acknowledging, something like, yes, I know you're angry. Tell me about it. Let me be here with you, with your difficult feelings. Because I'm big enough, grown up enough, mature enough that I can be present while you're having a hard time without bringing my hard times onto you.
Yeah, a secure home base.
That's what they call it.
As I hear you describe this experience, for example, like when a child is angry and that secure home base parent or caregiver shows up and just is able to be with instead of trying to fix or figure out or change, it's revolutionary. And I was seeing the correlation between that and the type of therapy that I think we both do, which is around attachment, around being that secure home base, welcoming all the parts without putting a pressure on that being to need to be different.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fundamental difference between how we, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, support others, because we're not actually saying, how do we fix that in you? Oh, you're anxious and angry all the time. I'm going to try to get you to be different. Could you speak to that and let me know if I'm off base on that?
No, I think that you're right. You can't make a person feel differently. I don't think. I mean, it's something that happens within a person's mind, body, spirit. It can happen between two people. Oh, I know. Here's the wording. Creating the conditions for healing. So, a healthy caregiver parent is able to create the conditions in which the child can grow. And part of growth is learning to handle your feelings as they arise. Since we don't have so much control over how we process our experience in the moment it happens. And of course, babies and young children don't have any control over that. And they learn through their own physiological development and also through the support of the people who are around them, through the support or lack of support from the people who are around them.
I know you primarily work with young people these days. And wait, you work with adults. You used to work with young people.
Yeah.
And I think it can be such a delicate conversation because so often talking about treating developmental trauma, I have inadvertently shamed parents.
Oh.
And, parents have so many struggles and limitations of their own. I was just curious how you do that dance as you work with your clients.
Which dance is this?
Around, if a child is really struggling and you kind of think it could be because the parent is not able to
Oh,
be
okay.
that secure, soothing home base. How do you navigate that without shaming the parents?
I talk about child development. I make it impersonal on a certain level. So there's a certain amount of psychoeducation. And parents don't realize, many parents don't realize how much children need them. They need the sense of safety and the sense, honestly, that all their parts are welcome. Even that screaming, you're not bad because you've been screaming. And so I've had parents, my child is really great at school, but when they come home, they're yelling and screaming. And I say, oh, okay. And what do you do when that happens? Well, I yell and scream at them because I get frustrated. And so then, there's a whole process. How does that feel to you? Most people are not happy yelling at their kids. I don't think I've met somebody who's happy about it. And then there's the work for you, the parent, is learning how to handle your feelings when your kids' feelings stimulate stuff in you. So we might end up talking about the parents' childhood. I mean, that's natural. And what would you have liked from your parents? And what would it be like if you were able to hear your child's distress without getting overwhelmed by it? Or maybe getting overwhelmed initially and then calming down. What would it be like for you? And I swear, this has happened so many times. The end of therapy comes around and the parent says, well, the kid's doing much better. He's gotten older and he's more mature. And I said, and have you changed at all? Are you doing things different? So they don't, I haven't explored if it's shyness or what it is that makes parents go, well, they're more mature now. The child's more mature. Well, yeah, they are more mature, but it wouldn't make a much, very much difference from where we started if the parent hadn't found a way to go, well, tell me how you're feeling. I can see you're really upset. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like ultimately it's a welcoming of all parts from the parent or caregiver and the child, really creating space for everyone to be in their process and have their feelings. Is that right?
Yeah. That sounds good.
I mean, I, because, okay, clarify for me, but now you work with adults who are coming to you with questions or struggles with parenting? Can you tell me
Well,
more
yeah.
clearly?
So I work with individual adults coming with various difficulties, but they all have not had good parenting or parenting with limitations.
Okay.
So I work with adults, also dealing, there's different degrees of traumatic experiences that they grew up with. And then I work with parents and their children.
Okay. That's what I was thinking of. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't even imagine how supportive that must feel to a parent coming to you, needing support, and being able to receive this co-regulation, transforming presence, and welcoming all parts. It sounds like really nourishing for the whole family.
That's the plan.
I wonder if you'd be open to talking a little bit about attachment. You're welcome to say no, but I feel like attachment really plays a strong role in this, whether you're working with children or adults, and how attachment gets impacted through trauma. What do you see that shows up in your office? That was about seven questions, so grab any of them.
Yeah, and I wanna take a step to make the picture a little bit bigger. And this is from a presentation I saw online by a woman named Linda Tai, Thai. I mean, she left Vietnam in a boat as opposed to some other kind of way of being a refugee. And this is not unique to her, this point of view, but she's the person that I heard express it so clearly, which is that we don't just have an attachment with our immediate family members. We have an attachment with nature. We have an attachment with our culture. And so much is transmitted through the family. But if the family is detached from nature, that's going to impact how a child is raised. So that's what I'm focused, what I studied was how is this child being raised, but not what is the broader context. A family that's in a war zone is a different kind of family than a family that is not in a war zone. So there's the whole social political thing around there.
Context.
Context, thank you. So back to your question. What was your question again?
If we were describing attachment and the power of understanding attachment a little bit in healing, say nobody knows what attachment is, who's listening? I know that's not
Okay.
true, but Could you share a little bit about that?
Sure. Say attachment, I don't, I'm trying to think of like a good definition. The quality of the attachment is the quality of the relationship between, in this case, a parent and a child. And this makes me think of you. Do you remember in grad school learning about the experiment with the rhesus, rhesus, rhesus monkeys? And these little monkeys were separated from their mothers, and they were, I think the choice was either, they're in a cage. This is a terrible thing, all of it, but it shows us something. They had the choice of a milk bottle or a soft, cuddly thingy to lean against, to be with. And they chose the soft, cuddly over the food. So that tells us how much, it tells me how much softness, actual physical softness, is necessary for a baby. And that softness with the parents, caregivers caring, creates a bond. Because again, if you think about it in the wild, if that little baby tiger isn't attached to its mommy, then it's not going to notice when it's walked away too far. It won't start crying. I love watching baby animal shows. And mommy won't know it's missing. I mean, she's attached too. It's a mutual experience, though the roles of each being is different. So when one of them starts crying for the other, that's the signal you are too far away for you to be safe. I mean, that's the signal for mom or the baby. I'm too far away. I don't know where you are. How am I going to be safe? So that's, I guess, I mean, the major purpose that attachment, that bonding, that kind of bonding serves.
Yeah. And when folks don't receive that kind of attachment, we could call that secure attachment, they often come to us. And we, as practitioners, become that secure home base.
Yes.
Yeah. Helping them
Yeah.
grow that inner sense of safety, because when that's connection was broken or never fully bonded, folks tend to feel alone and lost and overwhelmed and anxious and frightened and angry and confused, all the things. And so part of the healing process is creating that safety and connection so that they can in then internalize that and take it with them, feeling
Yes.
more at ease, more confident, more secure, more able to really meet their own needs and desires. So many of the folks that I see kind of got stuck in those younger years because that bond was not created fully, or it was
Yeah.
ruptured somehow.
Yeah.
And so it just feels like the highest honor in the world to me as a practitioner to have an educated around this, to have received this in my own therapy, and then to create a space where that's possible. I can't make it happen, but it's available if clients want to lean in that way. And it just feels like the most precious and the most powerful way to help somebody heal and grow into their mature, empowered, connected self.
beautifully said. The thing I would add to it is a cultural piece. I mean, in modern Western culture, we're very much in the nuclear family, the one-on-one. I mean, that's all very important. There was something that you said that just made me want to talk about cultures where children develop in community and you're not limited to one or two caregivers. I mean, what a ridiculous idea. Don't get me started. meaning our idea of the nuclear family is ahistorical. It's not how humans developed. It's not how most animals develop. I don't know if that's true or not. It's certainly not how humans have developed over time. Did that make sense?
Yes, and you said don't even get me started, but I kind of would like to get you started. Is there more that you would like to say or rant on about this broader cultural awareness?
Well, I think the very idea that there's only one, maybe two, if you're lucky, there's some close friends of the parents or relatives who are also really in good enough health, all parts of them, to be present for the baby. I mean, that's so great now when, when there's a family that's more than one person. And it's not because single parenting is bad. That's not my intention at all to say. But single parenting is, I think, I'm not a historian, but I think from what I know of social history, that's a recent development in terms of human existence. And it's part of capitalism, it's part of patriarchy, white supremacy. I mean, the whole caboodle of systems that do not support care and interaction, caring interaction.
Yeah, I support this statement. It would be wonderful to be moving, and I hope we are moving towards a different paradigm, maybe something that has never been created.
I don't necessarily, from my limited knowledge, have problems with other systems that seem to have worked fairly well prior to colonization.
Could you describe some
So
of those?
I'm a little shy to do that because I'm not a student of other cultures. But I do see, so I don't want to specify cultures, but I do see families where there's a lot of connection and from people of different generations, from friends, and there's a community. So cultures that develop with a communal a way of doing things have the potential, right? Unless individuals have been the individual adults or the community itself has been damaged by various systems of oppression, whether it's male dominance or racial dominance, whatever it is. So cultures, what I've read, and again, I'm not a historian or an anthropologist, so it's limited knowledge. But what I've read talks about matriarchal cultures, like certain indigenous cultures here in this country, have a very different idea about what life looks like.
Something that we often say in the healing process is open to all of the possibilities that come along with healing. And I was just kind of in my own mind envisioning a different way of being or, something from the past that it becomes more dominant in the present.
I think a lot of us would really like that. I mean, I sure would.
Well, I know we have a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering if there's anything else that's just wanting to be spoken, wanting to be shared. It could be completely related or non-related to anything we've already explored.
It's tremendously humbling and gratifying to be part of creating the conditions for someone else's growth. And it's not something you can do, I can do, I don't think anybody can really do from a position of superiority or and so even people are talking about decolonizing therapy, and one woman I've read with a book title that of that name, and I'm sorry I can't remember her name at in the moment, along with looking at all the isms. Now I just forgot what I was going to say. She talks about, these rules we have in therapy, what you can say about yourself as a therapist, as a person who's a therapist to the client. And we have a lot of rules for the protection of the client, but we also have rules that come from white dominated, male dominated systems of understanding psychology. So, I just think this is like, I mean, there's a lot of other things to look at around the politics of psychology and psychotherapy. Actually, this woman uses the term the mental health industrial complex. So this is, conversation is veering, but it's extremely, I think it's really extremely important to look at, well, what does that exactly mean, and how does it affect the quality of my work and my availability to be present with this client with all their experiences and welcoming in things they might have trouble with in the therapeutic relationship or in the world. So that's my plug. It's a great book. There are other people who are doing work on the same topic.
Jennifer Mulan, or
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Not fully sure how to pronounce her last name, but yes. So, how can people find you, and what kind of people would you want to be finding you? Like, I know you said a little bit about who you help, but if you can just say that again and let them know how they can find you.
Women who've had difficult childhoods. I've also worked with men who've had difficult childhoods. There's a theme here. Children who are having difficult childhoods, and parents who are raising children who are having difficult childhoods for whatever reason. This is a no fault, no blame. And even with parents, of course, parents have responsibility. However, it's not our fault we got to be the kind of parent. This is me talking to myself, that we got to be the kind of parents we are, that we came out of a situation. So I'm all about supporting parents to be the kind of parents they want to be.
And you work with folks only in California, right?
Oh, sorry. Yes,
Okay.
I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. I also do consultation with other therapists, and that doesn't have to be in California only.
Yeah. Thank you so much for giving of your time today and for hanging out with me. I feel like I am more regulated than when we started, and it's just so lovely to get to spend time with you.
You, Shelby, it's an honor to be here with you.